Good afternoon and welcome to Tom Harris USA, episode number 39. This is Tom Harris, and just a glorious day out today. And I've been out and about today. I went down to Loyola Park down by the lake and wandered around a little bit. It's today, Sunday, and there aren't that many people out and around, which is interesting because it's just so gorgeous out today. The leaves are starting to change color, which it just seems like the summer went by so incredibly quickly this year. Now, this is the perfect weather for getting out in nature and going hiking and going camping and going canoeing and that sort of thing. But Pete and I really haven't done much of that this year so far. And Pete has just told me earlier today that we should start planning a little getaway. So I'm hoping that that'll happen in the next couple of weeks. And of course, when we do, I'll talk about it on the program. We did a little bit of camping last year, and we went up to some of the state parks in Wisconsin. The problem with those trips is that we kind of, I guess it's really my fault, because I would plan, okay, well, we're going to go out to, you know, the Indian Mounds and look at them, and then we're going to do this, and then we're going to do that, and then we're going to stay overnight in the campsite. But we really didn't spend a lot of time in the state parks. We just used it basically like a motel, and would just sleep there and spend the evening there, have a little campfire and so forth. So I was just tasked with planning some sort of little camping outing. And so I'm looking forward to that, and hopefully the weather will cooperate. If it's anything like this weekend, it would be fantastic. That's something that's kind of in the works. I'm hoping that we can get into that situation in the near future. Pete went canoeing for the very first time last year around this time. And that was when we did a little surprise trip. And I told him, okay, Pete, we're going out of town this weekend. You know, leaving on Friday night, we're going to come back on Sunday. And then I wouldn't tell him where we were going to go. It was sort of a little secret. And what we ended up doing is going down to about 2 hours away from here, you know, not very far really, down near Ottawa, Illinois, and going on the Fox River, doing a canoe trip on the Fox River. And that was a lot of fun, and that's something I'd like to do again. So I'm thinking that maybe sometime in the next couple of weeks we'll go on another little canoe trip or go camping or something, assuming that the weather holds up. So I have started my job search, and I've been doing a little bit of work. My resume was already updated, and I'm going to try to hit the ground running. This is my last week of work this week. My last day at this job is Friday, Friday, October 2nd. And I'm hoping that by the time my last day rolls around, I'll at least have one interview set up. And there's a couple things that have appeared on Craigslist that I'm going to go and apply for. I hate job hunting. The only thing I hate worse than job hunting is moving. So I'm not looking forward to it. But one of the benefits that I have at the job that I am still in has been that I get a kind of an allowance to spend at the restaurants that the company owns. And it's an X amount of dollars per year. And I do have a little bit of house charge left, and we're going to try to use it up this week, which means that Pete and I are going to be going out a lot this week. And that'll be it. That'll be interesting. So I guess we'll see if the powers that be within my company are going to have any objection to that, because it is part of my benefits at work. It's like using up vacation days or sick days or anything, and we don't get sick days. So I'm just trying to get my money's worth out of this job and make the most of this situation where I'm being let go. Now, as it's happened, and I may have mentioned this before, as it's happened with this company, the people who are let go often don't end work on the day when they were originally told. I don't know how it's going to work in this case, but when they let my other coworker go back in March, you know, she had been strung along since November. You know, they had told her that she was going to, at the end of November, she was going to be gone, but she ended up you know, not leaving until March. And then my other coworker was kind of strung along for a couple of weeks. So I think it'll just kind of depend on how much work there is to do and whether or not they want to invest in, you know, in another week or so forth. But I think getting rid of the house charge will be a good move, because I'm pretty sure that otherwise I wouldn't have the chance to do it. There's a couple of things I wanted to talk about this show. Before I do that, I mentioned a while back now, I mentioned my ex-wife had a book published, and it was available from Amazon.com. And I just heard back from her about that, and she, you know, she thanked me for giving the book a plug. But she told me that if she sells books over Amazon.com, she doesn't get any money from that. So it's better, if you're interested in reading her book, The Angel Within, you can buy it directly from her. And she gave me a URL to her website where you can get it directly from her if you like. Now, the book is a male-male romance-slash-adventure type book. So it is essentially a gay romance novel. Of course, it's a fantasy novel as well, so it's got, you know, this gay romance angle to this fantasy adventure thing. And the URL is kind of long and complicated, and I had a hard time finding it. So I'm going to tell you to do it this way. If you're interested in ordering The Angel Within, go to Google and type in Kraken Store. That's Kraken Store. Store, and that should take you to the link where you can buy the book from her directly. Because, as she was saying, when you buy it from Amazon, they don't make any money off the book. So I'm just going to send that out there, and if anyone is interested, feel free to go there. She also has an art book available, which is her Yaoi illustration book. And there's other things that you can get, and you can commission paintings or prints or whatever from her. So go there, and it's, again, go to Google and type in Kraken Store, Kraken Store. Okay? Moving on along. Been hanging out quite a lot lately in the Atheist Nexus chat room, which has been kind of interesting. Now, a lot of the time, like most chat rooms, it doesn't have a lot of interest. I mean, you know, a lot of it is just kind of casual chat, and there are regulars in the chat that are always there, and then a few people who are just kind of sometimes there. I think in that sense, it's like every other chat room on the internet. You have your regulars, and then you have people that kind of wander through. And one of the things that has come up recently is that there's a lot of people out there who talk about coming out as an atheist. And it's very equatable in many people's lives with coming out as being gay or bisexual. Very, very interesting parallels here, because you have a lot of the same dynamics going on as far as your family and friends. And I found this somewhat myself. Now, when I have talked about in the past, you know, being an atheist, I've mentioned that there are a large number of people who were my friends back during the time when I was a Christian who have utterly rejected me now. One, you know, they're always happy to hear from me until they find out that I'm an atheist now. And then they get very cold and you know, refuse to deal with me at all. And, you know, it is, in a lot of ways, it's very, very similar to coming out as gay or bisexual. But in a way, I think it's actually easier to come out as gay or bisexual than it is to come out as an atheist. There was a study, and it wasn't that long ago, that said that the atheists are the least trusted minority. And that's rather ironic, because I'm finding that atheists actually are probably more trustworthy than a lot of people, certainly a lot more trustworthy than people give us credit for. But it is interesting, and there's a lot of conversation going on, of course, in within the atheist community. You know, I didn't even realize that I was part of an atheist community. I see that the atheist community doesn't have much of much cohesiveness, and I think that's because atheists tend to be free thinkers. There is a large variety of political opinion. There's a large variety of cultural opinion and so forth among atheists. There's no one thing in common that everyone has other than the fact that they don't believe in gods. So it is kind of a strange kind of community. And I suppose that's another point, and it's something that I've kind of noticed over the last 10 or 15 years, is that there's a lot less community in the so-called gay community than there used to be. I think that part of it is that back in the day, and this is, you know, back before I was involved in it, back before, I mean, even really back before I was born, that there was a lot of persecution and a lot of prejudice against it. Now, there still is. There's still a long way to go. But by and large, it has become more acceptable to be gay or bisexual or lesbian in today's culture. And it's because I think people have begun to see beyond the myth that has been spread around for so many years by various factions of the population that, you know, gays are these horrible, sinful, immoral people who, you know, want to destroy the American family. And I think a lot of people now, as more and more people know gay people in their lives, they've become more accepting of those people because they realize, oh, well, you know, this, I know this person, I know, you know, Mary, and she's not a, you know, this horrible stereotype that, you know, the pastor keeps talking about. So, I mean, I don't see how I can hate her in the way that, you know, we're supposed to, you know, there's a lot of that. And I think that's a, you know, of course, a very good thing. And as always, the more open that queer people are about themselves, the better. And that is, you know, a political decision that I agree with, that people should come out. And I think it's become very much easier for younger people now to come out. And I can't help but hope that atheists can take that as an example and do the same. And maybe things will continue to improve for atheists as well. Because honestly, if you really look at it, you know, gays and atheists have the same enemies, so the same adversaries. They're fighting against the same cultural factions that are trying to keep us down. And I think it's really important that, you know, that we keep up this fight, because, you know, we don't want extra rights that other people don't have. We want to be treated equally. And in a world where, you know, gay people can't get married and where, you know, atheists are the least trusted minority in America, there's still a long way to go. Now, we did have a small gay population in Athens when I was going to school there, and it was fairly small. And one thing that I liked about that community, and that is that they really lived up to their commitment to diversity. That was something that really irked me about the community in Florida when I was there, and also among the more activist type gays that I was connected with, is that, you know, they talked a good game about diversity, but when it really came down to it, they didn't want diversity. They really wanted everyone to see things from exactly their point of view. And if you didn't, you were branded as, you know, an assimilationist, or, you know, as a self-loathing homosexual or whatever. And I've known people who are really like that. And there's really no comparison. And really, the diversity is not what they were about at the time. Now, thankfully, that seems to have kind of passed a little bit. But at the same time, there doesn't seem to be as much community in general. And in the 80s, of course, everybody rallied around AIDS and around the people who were victims of that. And that was the flashpoint for a lot of the in-your-face activism that we saw back in the late 80s and early 90s. And that has faded. But I wonder, really, did it fade because things got better? There was more sympathy and less persecution, or whether they just realized that political attack was a bad idea. And I think it was probably the latter. I don't think that things improved that much. So now I find myself identified with what some people in the media are calling the new atheism, which essentially is what we had back in the 80s when people started to come out of the closet as gay or whatever. And it's basically people now who are atheists, people who are agnostic, people who are humanists, are now starting to come out of the closet and be more open about who they are. And I suppose I fit into that category somewhat, because I've obviously, since I started doing the show, I've become very much more vocal about my atheism. And it is, in a sense, very much like what was happening in the gay community back, and I'd say the late 80s, early 90s, but less militant, I would say. You know, if you remember, back in the late 80s, early 90s, there were groups that were out there doing direct action, as they called it, sort of trying to get their views across by doing these dramatic actions, you know, the people going and shouting in churches and so forth. And it's somewhat even similar to what's going on now with the teabagger movement and you know, the political movement, that people, small group of people, really, who are trying to loudly shout down any, you know, healthcare reform and that sort of thing. And I don't really see this kind of political action as being a useful tool. And I never really saw it that way. I think there are people who knew me back in the late 80s when their groups like ACT UP and Queer Nation, people like that, were doing their direct action. I always looked at it this way. You need to look at it in the sense of, if you're going to be active politically and you're going to be active in some sort of issue, the question that you need to ask yourself is, does this action help your cause? And if you're going into a church and yelling and screaming about homophobia, AIDS phobia, etc., does that really help your cause? I would argue that it doesn't. And I know that there are people who've known me since that time, people who were in my APA, who I have always had this disagreement with. I don't think that direct action is always a good way to go. I think that the question, again, is, will this help the cause? And if you're pissing people off, that's not changing anyone's mind. It's reinforcing the opinion that they have of your cause. And they're beginning to think of the people and the cause as a bunch of assholes. So I think the way to approach these things a little bit different than what the activists would like. And I think that indeed, when people have started to relate their cause to people directly, by engaging people personally, as opposed to trying to piss people off, you have a lot more progress being made. There was a story that I read about this on Atheist Nexus. This was a story about a gay group called Bash Back, and they did one of their actions at a fundamentalist church. It was a mega church of about 700 members, that they are virulently anti-gay, and they, you know, so obviously they're extremely odious people as far as that goes. They don't really have a lot of human compassion for people who don't fit into their little categories. And they did an action there where they kind of infiltrated the church, and then they started shouting, and they put up a banner. A couple of the people ran to the front of the church and started making out in front of the pastor. Two men, that is. And of course, that created a huge fuss, and that was the point. I mean, that was what they were trying to do. But do you think that anybody in that church had their mind changed by that? I don't. And in fact, somebody brought this up in the course of the conversation, that any gay people who are in the congregation, who are closeted or whatever, they just had things made a lot more difficult for them. And I don't think that the direct action people actually get that. That they just made things 1,000 times more difficult for those young gay people who are closeted, who are sitting there in that congregation. So that's why I'm against a lot of that direct action. Not that it's not needed, an increase of awareness, but I tell you something. Those fundamentalist churches are not going to change their mind. That isn't going to help them change their mind. It's not going to help them see the light. It's not useful. Any more than these teabagging groups that are going to town hall meetings and screaming and yelling and trying to keep the topics from being presented. That's not going to change anybody's mind either. And in fact, it's just going to make their movement look bad. Now, I think that political action is appropriate when it's appropriate. So that's just a thought. And if anybody else has thoughts on direct action, I would like to hear from you and hear why, especially if you think it's a good thing. Feel free to contact me. As always, my email address is tom@tomharrisusa.com. I have a little movie review. Pete and I have been seeing a little bit more movies than we have been at other points recently. And the movie we saw most recently was Inglourious Basterds. And that's been out for a while, and I'm not too worried about people getting spoilers from this. But it seemed to me to be kind of a pointless movie. It really didn't express anything. And I'm not going to go into too much detail in case people haven't seen it. I don't generally care for Quentin Tarantino movies. Never have. Pulp Fiction was okay. You know, Reservoir Dogs was okay. Yeah, but they weren't my favorites. And I would say this movie did not impress me at all. It was sort of a revenge fantasy. And it was a fairy tale. I mean, there was, you know, there was nothing realistic about this film. The reviews made it seem like, not the reviews, the previews made it seem like an entirely different type of movie than it ended up being. And that's okay, because there were moments, of course, that in the movie that I liked very much. But as a general opinion, I didn't really care for Inglourious Basterds. It just didn't seem to ring true, you know, and of course it wasn't true. It was sort of a fairy tale. But I kind of wonder, you know, what was the point of it? If anybody can help illuminate me, let me know. It just seemed kind of pointless to me. Tom@tomharrisusa.com is the email address. So, sort of related, this is something also that I've been watching lately. I went out and got the first volume of this DVD set of the complete set of Popeye cartoons. And I have to say that this is a wonderful collection. Now, I've always been a Popeye fan, ever since I was a little kid and watching Popeye cartoons on Captain Penny in Cleveland back in, I think he was on Channel 5 in Cleveland back when I was very, very young. Probably between, you know, the ages of 2 and 5 years old. And he would do, you know, Popeye cartoons and Three Stooges shorts and so forth. And I remember a lot of these old Flesher Studios Popeye cartoons that were actually movie shorts. They were shown before, you know, feature film in movie theaters back from 1933 up until, you know, the mid-40s, or probably the late 40s. And then they stopped doing theatrical shorts and started doing things on TV, which were not generally of very good quality. But these are the original black and white Popeye cartoon shorts. And they have done such a magnificent job of cleaning up these cartoons, cleaning up the artwork. They don't look bad anymore. they've restored them completely, and they sound great. They look great. Now, they're, it's not for everybody, and I guess that part of it will kind of depend on what your tolerance for 30s-era cartoon is. One of the things about the Popeye cartoons, they are not politically correct. And I find that very interesting. I'm not going to say I like it, but it is interesting looking at it as a historical document, because this really gives you an idea of how people viewed minorities back in, you know, 1933. Now, I'm not even partway through the first disc yet. I've just watched the first few cartoons, and they've packed this thing with extras. They have commentary for quite a few of the cartoons by various people. Some of the people who worked on them, some, most of them not. And they have these little documentaries as well. And every disc of this set, and it's a four DVD set, and this just covers from 1933 to 1938. Each disc has numerous extras, which I think is amazing. Now, I can't speak highly enough of the set, and I'm looking forward to getting the other two sets, which cover, I think, up until the 50s. But for right now, I'm just getting this, and I'm just very, very pleased with the set. So if you like Popeye, definitely, definitely, definitely recommend. A lot of these cartoons have been available for a long time in vastly inferior edited versions. These are the original, uncut, restored versions of all these cartoons, and they are just hilarious if you like Popeye. The other thing that I'm gonna get it eventually, and I'm just kind of waiting right now, waiting for to find a used copy or so forth, is the Beatles set. Now, I have always been a big fan of the Beatles. Actually, one of my very first memories was being allowed to stay up and watch the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show. This would have been 1964. That's one of my very, very first memories, was watching them on the Ed Sullivan Show. And ever since then, I've loved the Beatles, and they have now re-released these remastered stereo DVD, not DVD, CD set of the entire Beatles catalog, all 17 albums. And I had bought the Beatles collection on LP back in the day, and I gave a box set of the complete Beatles LPs. But I've never bothered replacing any of them on DVD over the years, and I guess this is the opportunity I'm looking for, and I think that I'm going to go out and get that at some point. Now, I don't understand. They do this limited edition of this box set of all of the albums in mono, and people are forking out hundreds of dollars for this thing. Why would they do that? I mean, it's not a realistic portrayal of the music as it was originally recorded. It's sort of like, well, why would you want a box set celebrating the limitations in recording that they had in 1963? I honestly don't get it, why you would want Let It Be in mono, or the White Album in mono. I don't understand it. I'm sure there's somebody out there can explain to me. The email address, one last time, is tom@tomharrisusa.com. So I guess I'm going to wrap up the show for now, and I just want to thank everybody for tuning in. This past week, interestingly enough, I hit my record for downloads. It was 30 downloads in one day. Now, it wasn't all the same episode. It was somebody probably who was going back and downloading the entire back catalog of shows. But it was the biggest day for downloads that the show has had yet, so I think it's worth mentioning. And I'm starting to see a little bit more international traffic in people who are listening to the show, so that's great. I'm really, really chuffed about that. So anyway, keep it up, guys. If anybody would like to participate in the show, you know, of course, feel free. I always like hearing from people. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and sign off for now. I'll see you next time with episode number 40. So this is Tom Harris from Tom Harris USA. I'll see you next time.